seems that the anger of 2010 is being superimposed on the gridlock of 1994. Is this going to be the worst train wreck in modern times when it comes to actually governing?
And joining us tonight, the arena, Katrina Vandenhoevel, who is a liberal and the editor of The Nation, and Nick Gillespie, who's a libertarian journalist, editor-in-chief of Reason.com. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you. Thanks.
Katrina, we'll start with you. As we've all seen, compromise has seemed impossible for political reasons the last couple of years. Is it going to be possible on November 3rd? Do we have a shot at compromise?
I could see, and polls show that Tea Partiers also support Social Security benefits, strengthening them, not cutting them. And we've also already seen a transpartisan alliance between Ron Paul and Barney Frank, libertarian and progressive liberal, on cutting $1 trillion out of the defense budget over 10 years. Those are my ideals for some transpartisan coalitions moving forward. Am I living on another planet? I hope not.
Wait, Barney Frank? Yeah. Yeah, that would be a great coalition.
There is ideological coherence to that. Does that make sense to you, Nick?
Yeah, some, but I mean, one of the things is you mentioned big banks, big corporations. We also need to rein in big government, and that's what is energizing the Tea Party, and I think we can make real cuts. The problem isn't gridlock come November 3rd. The problem is what has been passed in the past 2 years. The reason why the Democrats are in trouble in the midterms and the reason why Obama is so tremendously unpopular is not in spite of what he did, but all of the stuff that he passed through, starting with the stimulus, going through Obamacare, various pushing more auto bailouts, which he voted for under Bush and TARP. These are unpopular programs. And then tripling down in Afghanistan,
the tripling down in Afghanistan.
Gridlock would be a nice breather.
But here's where I disagree with you. I don't think President Obama went the bridge far enough.
Let her finish. Okay.
Libertarian.
Yeah.
Politeness.
That's right.
The stimulus could have been bigger. I think that in the healthcare, you see that the public option, which was driven out by lobbyists and others, would have been more popular. And I think there were millions of people who wanted to see banks reformed, not rescued. So I think you do see some anger, but it's not the conventional wisdom of overreach. It's that not enough was done.
You're saying it was underreach, that if Obama had doubled the stimulus, even though he has said that he got what he wanted, and it is a complete failure.
It saved or created 3.5 million jobs.
It did not save or create.
Let's put some numbers into this equation. It's undeniable that until the stimulus was passed, we were losing jobs at the rate of about 650,000, 700,000.
We were also in a recession, which was going
since then, the additional spending has brought us back to positive private sector job growth. Not what we need to be. Let me ask you a question. Are you suggesting that if the government had done nothing, that we would have gotten jobs back faster? Simple question.
Okay, what I am suggesting is that what hurts as much as economic contraction and turmoil is uncertainty. All that has been injected into the economic and political arena in the past 2 years, and actually I would argue this includes at least the last 2 years of the Bush administration, has been massive uncertainty. And if you want an economic recovery, okay, the stimulus didn't work by Obama's own measures. Unemployment is higher, et cetera. But we don't even know what the budget of the federal government is going to be for next year. We don't even know our tax rates.
Massive uncertainty. Nick, you know what? There is no uncertainty on Wall Street or in the big business community
in
the sense that they are sitting on $2 trillion in investments.
Why?
And they're not investing in rebuilding this country. They are speculating and doing paper speculation.
Are you planning for a future when you don't even know what your tax rate will be on January 1st?
But what are the alternatives?
Nick,
it's always interesting to me in the absence of alternatives, how would we have created jobs? He's right
in one sense. There is uncertainty, but the uncertainty comes from a lack of demand. It is eminently clear that $2 trillion that Katrina talks about is sitting on the sidelines. You don't need to build a new facility, a new manufacturing plant, or increase your capacity when nobody's buying.
Think for a second. So you're going to put more, there's all this money out there in the economy.
Right.
And then we're going to take money from the future because that's where government stimulus money comes from.
I have, and I'm also
in charge of a budget.
When you will invest is when your consumers are showing up and when you'll make what they want.
I won't even know what an employee is going to cost come January 1st because I don't know the tax rate. I don't know how the health care bill is going to play out. I'm not going to hire anybody.
The most convenient smokescreen by business, unrelated to the massive contraction of demand. Look at the way factories are sitting there at 50% of capacity utilization. That's why nobody's hiring or buying more capital.
Look, there's a reason, though, that businesses leave high-tech states like New York and go to Texas, where the tax rates are lower. There's a reason why that works.
But there's also a reason that we need demand in the economy.
Hold on. You're saying that tax rates have no effect on economic activity.
No, of course they do.
Have you ever taken a tax cut, or do you always just say, give me the highest tax rate possible?
The taxes are so low in this country at this moment in comparison to the last 50 years in our history. I believe that under President Eisenhower, it was a very different tax code. And this country had shared prosperity and security that the Tea Partiers, interestingly enough, when they said they wanted to take this country back,
the business taxes were lower under Bill Clinton. When Bill Clinton increased income taxes, he lowered business taxes and capital gains taxes. And it's relative to where you were. In any case, so it's like talking about
shared rates have gone from 94. There should be some shared agreements. I am for public-private partnerships, but you're not seeing a private sector reach out to help create the demand that would rebuild the country. I'm not talking only government.
TARP was poorly structured. It shouldn't have been done in the first place. The stimulus was poorly structured if, in fact, it did not create demand.
There were too many tax cuts larded into it in order to
create the demand this country needs. Was there a Democratic Congress? I mean, the Democrats had everything that they needed.
They gave a third of it to the Republicans in the hope of bipartisanship, which didn't work in terms of bipartisanship, but a third of it went to 95% of working Americans who got a tax cut.
That's right.
Look, 95%.
I don't see how anybody can disagree that corporations are going to be influenced by their lack of confidence in the marketplace.
If you want a vision of the American future, look to Japan, which went through this about 15 years ago, and we are doing exactly what they are doing, and now they're in their second decade. I've been intensely
critical of Geithner and Bernanke and Summers, who indeed are following Katrina as well. We think they should be doing more.
But
the uncertainty you're talking about was created by Wall Street. By the investment bankers, by the over-leveraging, by the crazy
Obamacare, by Obamacare. All I am saying is that when you have a massive health care legislation bill that is passed, we don't know what the price tag is. We don't know how it's going to play out. And the person who passed it, Barack Obama, says this is transformative. And then you're saying, oh, no, that can't have any effect on the way people act in the middle of a recession. I'm sorry, but you're not credible.
No impact. What we're saying is we're looking for primary causes here, and it is the lack of structural demand because the wealth of the consumer has dropped because the housing market collapsed.
Why did the housing market collapse? First off, it was pumped up by government policies, and I'm not talking about the Community Reinvestment Act. What I'm talking about is the fact that big banks knew they were being bailed out. Fannie and Freddie were buying up all paper at the government's request with an implicit and then explicit government bailout.
Which is why we agree that too big to fail should have been ended.
What do we have with the Dodd-Frank bill that was just passed? Now too big to fail is government policy.
I agree with you. It was a mistake.
Failure.
I've been intensely critical of it from the very beginning. I said it's too big not to fail.
For a guy who's critical of so much, I mean, you don't seem to have a grasp of why people are sitting on the sidelines. Everybody is tensed up because you don't know what the future because you've got a runaway government.
Oh, my God. This government is not runaway. And I would argue
how is Wall Street
uncertain when you are looking at record compensation levels in this year and the stock market has done well? When this business community says that Obama is anti-business, it's laughable.
I will agree with you.
Like Roosevelt has rescued capitalism from its excesses and should have done more to reform a system in light of the crisis we confronted.
I think we can agree on this. Obama is definitely pro-Wall Street. He is in the pocket of Wall Street, more so than Bush, I would argue. He is anti-business because he does not believe in laissez-faire and he does not believe in free markets.
Nick, Katrina, hold it right there. We've got lots more to talk about and we'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back in the arena with Katrina VandenHeuvel and Nick Gillespie.
You know that every night we are saying to smart, thoughtful guests sure. like you two who agree on so much, apparently, name your cuts. We're sure. trying to say we know we need to...
They agree on leather. Let's just be clear.
Yeah,
well,
I was a little scared to go there. No. Left and right converge on a fashion statement.
Neither of us but would agree to being called left or right, or at least I'm not
all right. Fair point.
No, I agree. I don't love labels.
All
right. You want my top two?
That's right.
End offshore tax havens. Senate report estimates bring in $100 billion each year. I would find a negotiated way out of this war in Afghanistan, which is costing this country $16 billion a month. And I would work in a transpartisan way to cut $1 trillion out of the defense budget over 10 years.
But I just want to say, look, those are good. I agree with them, but they're not enough. Give me something bigger.
I think the defense budget at $1 trillion is big.
That's and over 10 years. That's $100 billion a year. We need to hit
and $100 billion a year from the offshore tax havens.
Well, that's
going to be
every year.
Afghanistan, $16 billion a month.
Okay, so you're going to chop defense, you're going to get offshore revenue, and you're going to do something significant.
And then, of course, I would rework the tax code in this country. I would, of course, end the extension of Bush tax cuts to the very richest in this country.
What are you defining as the very richest? And why would you leave $3.2 trillion on the table of people making below 250.
Because I think the working class, middle class in this country.
Class is 249.
No, but 000? Those under 250,000, mm-hmm. all of those under, I
They're
think have gotten
class.
The shaft. Yeah. Middle class, upper middle class yeah. have gotten the and the working class have gotten a shaft in this country over the last 30 years when yeah. wages have stagnated and we've seen
and
a finance casino economy.
Have gone up.
But
would
I would put
anything?
A super billionaire yeah. tax up there as well,
and okay, that would be
the bat.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what, let's put a trillionaire tax.
I don't think we can do that. Let me ask you, just so it's clear, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, what would you do?
I would not put those on the table because I think also
like
you
John
have a two-party alliance on the Social Security
and
strength at a time of growing inequality and poverty. Do you really want to cut a program that has been the greatest force for dignity, decency, and anti-poverty program in this country?
Paul Ryan has put some of those things on the table.
I believe that very deeply. And if you know, listen, I believe in conviction politics. I will respect yours too. I wouldn't.
But I'm saying when you're talking about 12.4% off of the poorest people's payroll taxes that go to pay.
I would lift the tax above $106,000. That's
making $106,000
more
dignity to say like, oh, well, you know, in 50 years you might be.
We have other definitions of dignity.
Nick, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, well, to start with, just a quick bagatelle. First off, we need to think about getting rid of the idea of entitlements versus discretionary spending. We need to reconfigure the way we talk about spending.
Okay.
It is all government spending. First off, Medicare. Get rid of the Medicare prescription drug benefit, which is about $70 billion a year. And it goes to people regardless of income. When it was passed, seniors on average were paying 3.2% of their income in prescription drugs. They can afford it. The old are not. You know, it was passed in the 60s, but it's actually a Depression era mentality program. The retired are not poor anymore, and to the extent that they are, then you give them welfare, you know, to help pay for drugs. Okay, so you get rid of that.
So
that's $70 billion
okay.
a year for Medicare and Social Security. You get rid of saying they're entitlements, and you create fixed pools each year that can be spent. It should be means tested, and it also probably should be phased out for younger people. Let them do what in
phased out or raise the retirement age.
Well, both. Sure. I mean, I'm
okay.
just saying it
I'm
should
just
be.
To understand
yeah,
for
no, it's it, means tested. Raise the retirement age so that it reflects actual growth in life expectancy mm-hmm. and things like that. I mean, it's ridiculous that it takes a decade to go from 65 to 67.
But could I just say one larger point? I think we need in this country something that Western industrialized countries have, which is to make a big distinction between an operating budget and an investment budget. Mm-hmm. And I think if we had that, we would have a different discussion about the deficit.
That is essentially what we're talking about when we talk about entitlement spending versus discretionary spending. And you need to have long-range planning. But what I'm saying is that immediately get rid of Pell Grants, which were just turned into entitlements. That's ridiculous, okay? All it does is inflate education costs.
All right, gang, I got to end it.
But then beyond it, no, also then not
a turn his mic off.
Not $100 billion a year from defense, but $200 billion. In 2015, we're going to be spending $900 billion.
I was grounding it in the reality of an actual transpartisan coalition working on that.
Okay, well, let me just say this. You all have both done better than any politician we've had on this show.
Wow.
So, Katrina,
so
and Nick,
all right.
thank you so much. And you'll have to come back and finish that thought.
I was barely getting started.
All right. Thanks for an interesting conversation. We'll be right back.